Good morning. So there was this guy, and he was a kid, and he's sitting on a bench at this school, university, and he starts screaming out loud, "God is great. My goodness, God is the most amazing. Praise be to God." And everybody can hear him. He's screaming it so loud. And this professor at the university comes over to the kid, and he says, "What is so great about God that you would be so happy that you would yell it like you're yelling it so that everybody in the world can hear you?" And the kid goes, "Are you kidding me? I just got done reading about how amazing God is, the miracles that God performs. I just finished reading about how God took the waves of the Red Sea, opened them up so that the children of Israel could walk right through them." And the professor laughs. And he sits down next to the kid and he says, "I'm sorry. Science and facts will tell you that that's not much of a miracle. It's been proven that at that time, part of the Red Sea in spots was only 10 inches deep." And the kid's kind of stumped. He's thinking, "Wow, I thought God was great." And the man, he's feeling pretty good with himself. Because he's just enlightened this poor, unfortunate, naive little kid and told him that, you know, that's not really a miracle. Anybody can walk across 10 inches of water. And so the man walks away, feels like he's solved the problem. And immediately the kid starts to laugh and cheer and yell and say, "Praise be to God. Wow! God is amazing." And the guy turns around and he goes, "Didn't I just clear this up for you? Didn't I just tell you how those miracles don't really exist?" And the kid goes, "Yeah, sure. You know, the Israelites waded through 10 inches of water, but he drowned all the Egyptian army in 10 inches of water. That is amazing." And so, the question for us this morning is to do with miracles. And this is obviously not a real story, but the question that I want to draw our attention to is, do we look for miracles? Here's a miracle that's obvious to us. When somebody puts a hole through it, do we still see another miracle? Do we look for miracles in our own lives? And I always think this is a tough question, because when I think of the idea of miracles, I think of these amazing things. I think of supernatural things. I think of the Red Sea and it being parted. I think of water coming from rock. I think of the revelation that we just read about and how amazing that kind of stuff must be. I think of the healing that Jesus does and that his apostles do. And so because of that, because I put this category around a miracle, it's hard to imagine that miracles take place in our lives. However, I think if we think about that, I think what we'll realize is we're limiting God. We're putting a limiter on God and God's ability to work in our lives. Because I think if we really reflect, we'll see that God works in our lives moment by moment. It's not just a here and a there, it's not a story, it's not an anecdote, that's a big event, but it's moment by moment. And we're going to look at a few passages in the New Testament. Matthew chapter 6 is where we're going to start. Matthew 6, verses 25 through 34. And I'm going to paraphrase some because I don't want to spend too much time on the details that are in it, but I do recommend reading it all later. But Matthew chapter 6, verses 25 to 34, kind of paraphrase. It says, "If you decide for God, living a life of God worship," so if you decide that you're going to live in God, "it follows that you're not going to fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes. It follows that we're not going to get all caught up in what we're wearing and how we look and the mirror we're looking in and the way we appear to others. It makes sense that we're not going to get hung up on all the details of life. Because in this section it says, if you look at the birds, free and unfettered, not tied down to a job or anything like that, they're careless because they're in the care of God. And we count far more important than these birds," as it says here. And so if we're in verse 27, if we're caught staring in the mirror, fussing about our looks, getting worried about our appearances, about all the details that the world makes important, we're not doing what is right. We're not making much of a difference, because it says to consider the lilies of the field. And yes, because of lily, I found this verse. But consider the lilies of the field, how we don't even notice most of them. But yet they're all beautiful, and they're all there, doing their thing. Even if we don't see the color and the design quite like it was meant to be. And it says that the best dressed people, the best looking people in the world, would look shabby next to them. And so in verse 30 it says, if God gives such attention to the appearance of wildflowers, of lilies, most of which are never seen, don't you think that He'll attend to us? That He'll take pride in us and He'll do His best for us? And it goes on that we know how God works. As brothers and sisters, we know how God works. And so for us, we need to pay attention that He will attend to us. He does take pride in us. He cares for us. And so we need to steep our lives in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. And we can't worry about what we're missing out on that doesn't relate to God, because we'll find our everyday human concerns will be met by God. And so in verse 34, it says, give your entire attention to what God is doing right now, and don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow, because God will help us deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. And so this is what I want us to think about. The title that I ended up with for my exhortation was Reflecting on the Miracles in Our Lives with Thankfulness. And there's three parts to that. There's the first part, which is believing there are miracles. There's the second part, which means that you're reflecting on it, meaning you're actually looking for those miracles. And then the third part is to actually be thankful for them. And so I think as we think about this section that we just read, it's very important that we consider the idea that miracles do exist. Because if we say that miracles do happen, then we are obviously leaving ourselves open for the reality that we might be able to receive whatever the Lord has for us. And conversely, if we say that miracles don't happen, well, then what we've done is we've closed the door on God. We're saying that we don't really believe that God can or does perform miracles, and they especially won't happen for me. And so when you put it that way, receiving of miracles is not that complicated a procedure. It involves just enough faith to know that our Lord God can perform miracles. And then it requires us to be open to receive whatever He has for us. It said in verse 34, give your entire attention to what God is doing right now. That means moment by moment, God is working in our lives. Because God's going to help us deal with whatever hard things come up in our lives. And so you're probably asking yourself, because I did this, you know, why all this focus on miracles? Well, I find myself, the older I get, and I'm about to turn 40, which is old, in my opinion. But I thought when I turned 30, I was on my way downhill. I thought that was it. I was going down. Get the walker ready. I'm coming. But here I am. I'm at 40. And you start reflecting again. And I find myself doing a lot of this 20/20 hindsight. And it's amazing how clear things are if you really open your eyes and look at them backwards. And in my life, which at times in my messed up focus feels like, oh, this is horrible, when I consider it with the glasses on that are God's, God goggles, is what I call them in my head. Sometimes things need to stay in my head. But when I consider them through those goggles, it's amazing how many things in life, my life especially, are truly amazing and perhaps even miraculous. I've mentioned it many times to many of you before. It's amazing that I even got through my teenage years. I was an accident-prone kid. I did everything to the limit of what was considered right versus wrong. And here I am still. And when you look back at that, you go, wow, what a miracle that I'm still given this opportunity to live and to be a worker for God. And when I start considering the way that God works in my life, it actually causes me to grow in my faith, and it builds a better hope. And it's just on the simple things even. The blessings that I receive, in my opinion, are considered miracles. You know, it's the life first that I have. It's the love that everybody has ever shown me in my life, whether it was merited or not. And I don't think any of us merit love, so we're very lucky to have it. It's companionship. I've been married almost 20 years to somebody who has to live with me. You know, that's not easy. You guys get to see me for an hour. Oh, Chris, he's so great. That's only for 2 weeks. Okay, once you live with me 20 years, it gets a little worn out. The children, I didn't appreciate kids until you get one your own. It's kind of like a new car. You know, you don't really appreciate what it takes to have a new car until you own your own. You know, so I find myself waxing Lily, putting her out in the sun for everybody to see, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's children are amazing and a huge miracle. You don't even understand the miracle of childbirth until you actually see it. Your ecclesia, this ecclesia, is an amazing miracle to me. I am so fortunate to have an ecclesia. I've lived where it was tough to find which ecclesia you're going to find. We lived in Arcadia once where three different levels of distance were the same. And we're like, I don't know. And we, you know, you start feeling not sure where you're going to go and so forth. I am attached to this ecclesia. And this ecclesia loves me in spite of me. We are very fortunate to have this body. The security that I experience in my life. I've been without job, with job. I've had great jobs. I've had bad jobs. All of these things, decisions I've made, are all miracles and blessings from God. And with that comes an overall stability in knowing that my life, in the end, if I continue to reflect and do right, is working towards a greater hope. And not one of these things comes to me or comes to any of us without God's hand at work, moment by moment in our lives. And even with all the blessings, even the trials, all the frustrations, all the struggles, when you reflect on them, I still see how God was moving things around and putting a little test in my way that I could overcome if I followed properly. I like to think of God as a spotter, and this is a gym term. I have a gym membership. I don't actually go, but I know what happens there. And at the gym, when you're lifting weights, the weights get heavy. And what they have is they have this guy who will stand there, and he will spot you. And if you ever watch them, I've done this actually. You don't even actually do anything, really. You're just sort of putting your pinky, you can put your pinky under it. And it's just enough help to allow the person to get that weight back up on the rack. And sometimes, you know, if you're like this, you know, then they help you all the way up. But most of the time, if you ever look at the spotter, it's usually this little wimpy guy who's there just to talk. But the reality is, it's that little bit of help that we need. And God does that for us in the little things in our life. Because of our focus, because of our direction, because of what we fed ourselves up with, we are able to go out into this difficult life and succeed. Succeed spiritually. And we do that because God is there helping us, spotting us along the way. Recently, and I got so many instances, but recently a time came where a number of these categories that I feel we're blessed with really showed up. And it was that of the Simi Hill Sunday School program. And for those of you who haven't done it, it's horrible to be the director of the program. Absolutely horrible. It's a big giant, you might as well, you raise your hand and go, ouch, why did I do that? You know, I shouldn't have volunteered for that. And a lot of it is because there's so many components that have to come together, most of which are people, and they're hard to work with. If it was just a bunch of chairs lined up, you know, that's easy. But getting people to work together is difficult. And yet, in the end, what an amazing experience. In the end, everything came together. And our best efforts were put forward, and they were fantastic. They were so appreciated by everybody. It was unbelievable. And it didn't happen because of me. It happened because of God's help. And we don't see it, but God's help was throughout the whole thing. In the ways that people gave time, people don't just volunteer with their fleshly instincts. God is in us and allowed us to step up to the task in many ways. The efforts put forth by the children and the adults and the teachers and the choir and the people who made the food and the people who made sure the hall was clean. I mean, all of these efforts all come together, and they come together because we are all centered around God. And God is working in every one of our lives. The spiritual attitudes that prevailed, and I say prevailed because mine wasn't quite there the day before. But fortunately, thank you, Amber, I was steered in the right direction again. And the reality is it's huge, because I just about lost my spiritual perspective while we're here trying to do something that's supposed to be very spiritual. And it's because God allowed us to all work together and put our best efforts forward so that for the greater good we were able to do something. We don't have to believe that our faith can move mountains. We just have to believe that God can move mountains. And I think in the end we're going to be okay. And that's really what happens in our life. We're not so faithful that we go out and we say, I'm gonna move this mountain. We don't do that. But what we do know is that God, working in our lives, can do anything. And so with that in mind, I want to focus in on a couple of miracles that take place in the Bible and try to find some reflection for us as well in these. Turn to Mark 5. Mark 5 is huge with miracles. It talks about Jesus arriving by seaside. Mark 5, verses 21-43. And I'm going to have to move along because I'm running short on a lot of pages, not a lot of time. But this is the story of Jairus, I think that's how you say it, Jairus coming up to Jesus, bowing down his feet because his daughter is deathly ill. And Jesus comes up to the seaside, and Jairus comes down in verse 21 and 22 and 23, earnestly says, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her that she might get well and live." And he went off with him. Jesus went off with him. And a great multitude follows, because when Jesus is going somewhere, everybody wants to see what's going to happen. And on the way there, interrupted, a woman who's got this hemorrhage that she's been dealing with for 12 years, and she's gone through all the physicians, tried everything, she comes and grabs Jesus. And first of all, this woman exhibits amazing faith. That's huge faith. That's real faith. Because she just grabs Jesus. If she says, "If I could just touch his garments, I shall get well." And she does, and immediately in verse 29, the flow of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. And so this is a real miracle. This is one of those miracles, that supernatural type that I was talking about. And unless we likewise reach out for our miracles with this faith, as this woman did, we're not going to attract the Lord's attention to our own situations. We may not have this hemorrhage of 12 years. We may not have this deathly illness. We may just need some little help. But unless we're willing to reach out in that faith, that same kind of faith, we're not necessarily going to attract our Lord's attention. And so immediately Jesus perceives in himself that his Holy Spirit power has gone forth. And he turns around and says, "Who touched my garments?" And 31, the whole multitude and everybody pressing says, Who touched him? And everybody looks, and they see the woman who had done this. And the woman, she was actually scared. She was trembling because she is aware of what just changed in her. She fell down and told him the whole truth. And Jesus says to her in verse 34, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." Her faith had made thee well. We need to reach out in this same way. We need to reach out in faith. And then, as she did, falling at his feet, be thankful for the results that we receive. And so this is in the middle of this other story, because we can't forget, Jesus was actually on his way to heal somebody else, Jairus' daughter. And so in verse 35, he says, "While he was still yet speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official saying, 'Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore?'" Don't bother Jesus. Your daughter's already dead. He can't fix her. That's what they're saying. They come with this lack of faith, these people. They got this negative attitude. And yet right away, Jesus doesn't perform that huge supernatural miracle. The first miracle he performs right here is this restoration of faith. Because Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken in verse 36, says to the official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." He just says, "Yeah, yeah, take that attitude and change it. Have faith that I can still do this. And so they came to the house of the synagogue official, and he beheld a commotion and people loudly weeping and wailing because the daughter had died. And entering in verse 39, he said to them, "Why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep." And they began laughing at him. But putting them all out, he took along the child's father and mother and his own companions and entered the room where the child was. And we have to realize, in this section, I think it's very important that these people are talked about. Because most people, like the ones that are gathered in the home of Jairus, the ones that are mocking God, mocking Jesus, mocking the faith, they're laughing. They're around us. They're always around us. We can't allow ourselves to be discouraged by these people. When situations are seemingly impossible, we need to remember that nothing is impossible with God. And that's a big, big statement, but it's true. It says in verse 41, "And taking the child by the hand, he said to her," some words, which translated mean, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." I always wonder, why he doesn't just say, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." But anyway, he says, "Talitha cum," and that's what that means. "And immediately the girl arose and began to walk, for she was 12 years old, and immediately they were completely astounded." All these people that had just put it off and said, "It can't happen." Now they're astounded. What an incredible couple of miracles that we just witnessed in this section. And each one is simply based on one principle. Having faith that miracles can happen, recognizing that the miracles happen, and being thankful that they did happen. A faith coupled with interest creates an outcome revealing the miracle in each of their lives and each of our own lives. This is what we are to seek. We are to ask, and it shall be given to us. We are to seek, and we shall find. We are to knock, and the door will be opened to us. If we don't do any of those, the door is closed, we get nothing, and we're disgruntled. That's the opposite of that. Let's go to Luke chapter 17, and let's consider the story of the 10 lepers. Luke 17, verses 11 through 19. And here you got 10 lepers who are looking to Jesus for a miracle. It says, "Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee, and as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, 'Jesus, Master, have pity on us.'" In verse 15, one of them, when he saw, well, let's go back, verse 14, the big part. "When he saw them, he said, 'Go, show yourself to the priests.' And as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. And Jesus asked, 'Weren't all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except for this one foreigner, the Samaritan?' And he said to him, 'Rise and go. Your faith has made you well.'" Well, what do we think about this story? I mean, it's pretty incredible, obviously. 10 lepers healed. But why weren't all of them thankful? You got 10 lepers. To be a leper was a horrible thing. It's a bad word. We don't like it now. Back then, it was horrible. When you were a leper, you were segregated from everybody. It wasn't just bad enough that you had a skin condition, which, by the way, is probably the worst kind of disease anybody can have because it's very visible. Everybody knows you're a leper, okay? It's not bad enough that that's your life, that you have this condition, but even more is the social aspect of it. You're put off. You're sent out. You're unclean. When somebody was to walk by, your head was supposed to be covered, and you're supposed to yell, "Unclean, unclean," so that they don't come near you. And yet these lepers, 10 of them, they're their own little colony, and they call out to Jesus, and they say, "Have some pity on us." They're not asking him for money. They're not asking for anything. They actually believe that Jesus can help them. They're calling out to him. They're breaking the leper rule, and they're calling out to him and saying, "Jesus, have pity on us." Because Jesus is known to be somebody who can heal, somebody who has touched a leper in the past. And so these lepers are looking for him to make them better. They were looking for a miracle. And so Jesus tells them, "Go show yourselves to the priest." And I'm sure at the time they're going, "Go show ourselves to the priest. We came to you, Jesus." But okay, we got nothing to lose. They go show themselves to the priest. And on their way, they get healed. But only one of them went back to Jesus to thank them, to thank him. And I started asking, why is that? Why would only one thank for this? And I think it's because of their expectations. I think they expected Jesus to heal them. So what's the big deal then after that? They walk away, they get healed, they take it for granted. That's what Jesus does. Jesus performs miracles. And so therefore, only one of them recognizes that miracle and goes back and thanks Jesus. Whereas the other 90%, they go off on their own way with that expectation. And so I think that's the principle that we take away here. The first one is that thankfulness depends on our expectations. Certainly these folks, these lepers, had expectations of what Jesus was going to do, and that's what he did. He fulfilled the minimum in their minds. A crazy, great, amazing miracle, and yet to them, it was just the minimum. I found this story interesting. It fits. It's a story of two guys. And they're on the street, and this one guy, this friend of his, he's totally down, just about to cry. It's like his life has fallen apart. And the one friend said to him, "What has the world done to you to make you this sad?" And the one crying says, "Well, you know, 3 weeks ago, my uncle died, and he left me $40,000." And the friend goes, I don't see that as a problem. Is there something else? You know, that happens. And he says, "Well, 2 weeks ago, a cousin died, and he left me $85,000. He says, "I'm not getting it. I mean, you're crying, you're down. Yeah, you know, some people have died, but you just inherited a great deal of money. What's the problem?" And the guy says, "You don't understand. Just last week, my great aunt died, and she left me almost $250,000. He says, I guess I'm not understanding what's going on here because I understand people have died. People do die. But for you, I mean, look how much you've been blessed with. You've just inherited so much money." He goes, "Yeah, but this week nobody's died and I got nothing." You start getting in this pattern where you're starting to expect things, and when something doesn't happen, you don't appreciate it anymore. There's no quicker way to make people ungrateful than to give them everything they want all the time. Because when we get everything we want all the time, it becomes consistent and regular, and we become entitled in our minds. I sell health insurance to businesses. There's no law that says businesses have to give their employees health insurance. But when we're employees of those businesses, we think, "Well, they better give me a good health insurance plan." And we get this sense of entitlement, that that's what we're expected to get. Instead of being grateful when somebody's giving us something better than nothing. I mean, God blesses us on a yearly, weekly, monthly, daily, moment-by-moment basis. The fact that we're sitting, breathing, and our heart's pumping, and we're waking up and being able to come here and worship our God and remember our Lord Jesus Christ, those are huge blessings that we take for granted. We expect that we're going to wake up. We expect that the hall pavement's going to be done and we're going to have somewhere to park. We expect that the lights are going to be turned on, that Chris got text message from Josh and he's going to actually have an exhortation. We expect all of these things to happen. And we have to be careful because we can start to be ungrateful for what we have. I mean, some of us might have woke up this morning and not really appreciated the fact that we have a Sunday morning memorial service. And we came here because it's what's expected, and we expect it's just going to happen, and we're not really overjoyed. There are some of us that are like the one leper who are extremely thankful every time. If you've ever not known that person, talk to Gladys after every memorial service. She will tell you how grateful she is, and it rubs off on you. We need to have that feeling that, wow, I've been given this privilege again. I get it every day, and here it is again. What a miracle. We also have to be careful that we don't take our family and friends for granted. You know, maybe it's our husband or our wife, in my case, my wife. You know, constantly working, constantly blessing us, earned or not. doing things for the sake of the family, which is in turn for us. We have to be careful that we don't get to the point where we expect that to happen. Yeah, I've been married almost 20 years, and I haven't sent one thank you card or holiday card to anybody. Yet I get thanked for a bunch of them. And it's one of those things that gets overlooked, but I expect it to happen. Why? Because Kat's always done it. And that's just one thing. There's so many things that each of us do for each other, and we start forgetting that they're still happening. Instead, we sometimes become the opposite, those nine lepers who just expect things, and we start thinking, maybe I can get a better wife, a better husband, a better job, a better car, a better this, a better that, better children, better parents. You can't get better parents, they're yours. But you can constantly find yourself in this cycle where you think you deserve more, and you end up becoming so unthankful and ungrateful for what you actually do have, which is actually a blessing and a miracle that you have it. Recently in my life, this happened. Horrible story. I hope you don't judge me too harshly for it. It's a story of a gift. Did you ever think that you were going to get something for your birthday? And you started thinking about it and going, oh, I can't wait till I get that for my birthday. Never? Robin? Dave, you've never gotten Robin anything, apparently. She don't know. But anyway. You're lucky. Anyway. That's the last time Robin pays attention to me. But for some reason in my head, well, I know the reasons, but for some reason in my head, this last birthday I had, I for some reason thought I was getting a surfboard. I haven't had a surfboard since I was 20 years old. And in my mind, in my plan, in my life, I said, you know, I really want to surf again. And when I was fat, I said, no way I'm getting on a surfboard. I barely even get myself up off the floor. I'm not going to push myself onto a surfboard, let alone expect it to be buoyant enough to hold me. So back then, it was like out of sight, out of mind. But I had said to myself back then, if I lose and get to a certain weight, that's when I'm going to start surfing again. And so this birthday that's happening, I've lost all my weight. And I'm thinking, perfect. This is the birthday to get a surfboard. My dad has an extra surfboard. I'm even willing to take his hand-me-down. You know, which is really sad. You know, when your dad's cooler than you, that's always bad too. But anyway, my dad's got an extra surfboard. And everybody's coming for my birthday. My parents, Kat's parents were around, or at least her mom was. My old best friend, Chris Miller, Glenn and Jennifer are around. All these people come together for my birthday. I'm going, oh, I'm getting a surfboard. And I ended up with a video camera. And it's an amazing video camera. It's what I want. My parents, her parents, Kat, they all went together. They put all their money together and they bought me this fantastic video camera. I have a new daughter. I need a video camera. You know, I love, you know, videoing myself and watching myself later because that's how I am. You know, I mean, why wouldn't I want a video camera? You know, I mean, it's the best gift in the world. And when I got it, I went, oh, where's the surfboard? I mean, there's no way anybody's buying a surfboard now. I know what this costs, and there's no, you know, and that's what I was. Instead of being happy with the gift I was given, I ended up being disappointed at a time when I should have been extremely happy. It doesn't make sense. But this is what happens. We start building in our minds these expectations of what we think we should have, and we forget to recognize that, you know, we don't deserve anything. We should just look at what we've been given and reflect on that in a positive way. Colossians chapter 3, verses 15 through 17. God throws thankfulness throughout his whole description of how we are to relate with one another and to relate to him. And I think this just applies to our overall life. It says, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom, and as you sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with gratitude in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And notice how God speaks to us through Paul, in that in our relationships we are to always be thankful. In our worship to God and with each other, in this fellowship that we have, we are to be thankful. In our service to God, in our life, because that's really what our life is a service to God, in word or in deed, we are to be thankful. We are to do it all with thankfulness and gratitude in our hearts for God. It's to be the background of our lives. It's the fact that one leper was aware of. They all got the miracle, all 10 of them. But 9 were satisfied with just the miracle, and one leper came back to thank for it and ended up getting the miracle worker as well. Jesus told him, "Rise and go, your faith has made you well." And he was already healed. And yet now his whole hope is fulfilled. He got wholeness. He got more than just the miracle. He got everything. And so we need to reflect. When we start looking at our lives, we need to keep coming back to God with gratitude in our open hearts. It's the only way that we're going to be able to receive the further blessing that's wanted to be given to us. And the greatest blessing of those is His Son. And we do this every week. We reflect on His Son every week. And we definitely can't take that for granted. We can't settle for just the miracle of what happened. We have to look for Jesus Christ. We need to raise our expectations, perhaps. Because every time we raise them, Christ is going to meet them. God is going to meet them. Above and beyond what we could possibly ask for or imagine. Have you ever tried to imagine the kingdom? It's impossible. You can think of bits and pieces, but it's impossible. Why is it impossible? Because our expectations cannot reach that high. And yet God is going to fulfill that in every one of us. God knows what is best for us and will do what is best for us. Miracles happen, even very, very little ones. And if we believe in them and we reach out in faith, we will indeed begin to see them, even if they are small. Jesus said, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." This is our miracle of salvation. By faith, we must seek it through Jesus, because there is no other way. We can spend all our time and money looking for other ways to be happy and well, but we'll never find a true miracle in that. Jesus is the answer. He's the only answer. And it's in this understanding and this 2020 hindsight that gives us proof that miracles do happen.